Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you very much. Hi, everybody. We welcome you back to Close Up Talk Radio. I am Doug Llewellyn, and it's a pleasure to be back here with you. And I'm excited because we're welcoming back a guest that we have spoken to previously. She's a wonderful lady. She is a teacher. And we're going to talk about the subject of education and the role of teachers. There's a lot going on, as you know. Education has become a really hot topic. And the role of parents in education. There are a lot of people, you know, that think the parents, there are those who say parents should not be involved. And, of course, there are others who say, the majority, who say parents should indeed be involved. It's critical. Maureen is one of those. She says, when you take parents away from that equation, children are not going to get a good education. Parents, she points out, are the primary educators of their children. Of course they are. You know, they started educating their children from day one. Anyway, parents do have the right to be involved. They have a right to question and to empower themselves and to be very actively involved in their kids' education. And our guest, Maureen Santora, says shame on anybody in education who denies that. She thinks it's really outrageous. Maureen was with us last week. She talked about this subject with Jim Masters last week. We're continuing our conversation with her on this whole subject of education. Things like what's missing from education today? That's a good question. What is missing? And what is it when parents go to a teacher's, a PTA meeting, a parent-teachers association meeting, and they can't get their points across and they're barred from coming in some places? That does happen. And, of course, there's also the controversy over teachers' unions. Are they good? Are they bad? What do they bring to the table? Maureen knows. She is a member of a teachers' union. She's been one for a long, long time. Anyway, she's based in Long Island City, New York, just on the outskirts of Manhattan. She's a lovely lady, and it's a real delight to have Maureen back with us. Maureen Santora, again, Maureen, welcome. Hey, good morning. Nice to have you with us. How are you today? Happy New Year, too.
Happy New Year, Doug, and it's good to be back, and I'm delighted to be on line today. I'm very, very happy to be speaking with you today.
Well, let's, for those who haven't heard you before, or know anything about your story, let's tell a little bit about your background. Are you still teaching? Let's point that out. Are you still teaching today?
No, I retired. No. I retired in 2001 after my son was murdered on September 11th as a firefighter. And it would have been impossible for me to continue teaching. I was just so distraught. And for any parent out there that has lost a child, they know unequivocally how difficult that is. And the process of healing, you know, takes many, many years. So I retired, and I had retired just before 9/11. So it wasn't because of Christopher's death, but it was because it was the time for me to leave the system and pursue, you know, other endeavors. And I have since done that. I wrote three children's books on 9/11, and I've been active in a number of, you know, venues, you know, justice. And as a person, I was always active. If I felt something was wrong or unfair, I would speak out. And I did that throughout my whole life, my early, you know, years in high school and college. And I was never disrespectful. I was always respectful. But I worked very hard to get my point across. And I think that's something that many of the protesters today do not do. And if you are a respectful person and you treat people with respect and dignity, your voice is heard, and it's heard loud and clear. And if you are not, you were kind of dismissed, you know, as a kook or somebody who was unstable, and so your voice is not heard. But I taught, I began teaching in 1967, when the teachers union in New York City, in particular the UFT, was first starting. And I was part of the two strikes that occurred in 67 and 68. and the teachers took a very big hit. We lost a lot, but we fought for a number of things. We fought for the kids. We fought that the children would be given classes that they were not being given, like art and science and special science classes and gifted programs and so forth. That was in 1967 and 68. And to date, teachers ended up with preps that were supposed to be used exclusively for planning the next day's lesson. We handed in all of our plans. I wrote lengthy plans that were 7, 8, 9 pages long, typewritten to every administrator that I ever worked under. And it prepared me, and it helped me tremendously to become an effective teacher. I really loved my job. I have to say that it was a blessing, and it was a joy to be a teacher. I loved the kids, but the kids always came first. And so as the union evolved, the kids stopped becoming first, and teachers' rights became first. Now, that was okay in the beginning because we really didn't have any rights. But today, that's not necessarily true, and I'm very, very disturbed at, Mandy Weingarten, who would make a statement like it's unsafe for teachers to be in the classroom and they should stay home and we should, I'm very, very upset over that because the truth of the matter is, and the science tells us, that kids are much safer in school, that they are not as vulnerable to this COVID as the adults are. And if the adults are vaccinated, according to the science, you may get COVID, but you will not die from COVID and you will not, necessarily get ill. Now, that has also been partially disproven because people, have gotten very ill even though they've had the vaccines. But the truth of the matter is kids are much safer being in school than they are staying at home. It doesn't help them. Most kids are not going to perform at their peak being on a computer all day. They're just not. So I'm very, very disturbed at the language and the tone and the bossiness that has occurred in the teachers' union. And I don't think it serves the teachers who want to work with the kids, who want to come in, who want to teach the kids. And I'm just very, very upset about it. I'm very disappointed in the union that I first started when it first began has now turned into a political machine. So
that's amazing. Well, yeah, you're on a roll. But
yes,
it's very
I am.
Interesting. You are on a roll. I didn't want to interrupt you there. It's very interesting what you point out. You know, I was going to ask you in general, you retired 20 years ago, effectively.
Yes.
But you're still very knowledgeable about what's going on. What do you think the biggest changes have been since you retired? How would you answer that? And you taught in the public schools, in New York.
Yes, I did.
How would you answer
and all of my children went to public schools in New York City. And the reason they did that is when my kids were little, I went around to all of the private schools. And, of course, I went to the public schools. And now my children are in their 40s. So, they're older. But I felt that the public schools offered the best education. And so that's where my children went. And I really believe that in the days that I was teaching, you were permitted as a teacher to explore those aha moments. Now, I'll explain what that is. An aha moment is a question that is not necessarily on a focused topic, but it's a question that a kid has that's related to that topic. And it's not part of the script. Today, teachers work from a script. They work from a book. Every teacher has to teach reading at the same time. Every teacher has to teach math at the same time, every teacher. So it's a scripted learning that we have developed, which is not beneficial necessarily. But the aha moments occur, and they don't occur all the time. They occur every once in a while, where a kid, a student says, gee, what about this? And so you go off on a tangent maybe 5 minutes. You don't spend hours doing this, but 5 minutes exploring that inquiry that the child has. And sometimes it leads kids to want to explore more on their own. Those are very crucial moments, and every teacher used to be able to do this. We can't do that anymore. I have two daughters who are in education. They are not permitted to do any aha moments because they have a scripted text, and they are required to, follow this text to the letter. Now,
really?
That's not necessarily education,
Yeah.
If you're able to read a book and you're able to follow a text, you're not necessarily teaching children, because your aim with kids is to teach them to love to learn. And the only way you love to learn is by exploration and investigation and by pursuing things that are really interesting to you. And that is not necessarily part of a curriculum from any particular grade. But you want kids to do the exploration on their own. You want to encourage them. You want them to be able to go out and do some serious research, as they get older, to pursue things that are very interesting to them. If you don't have that in education, you don't create children that want to be students. They are just going to school. They are learning whatever. And from a long, long time now, teachers taught to a test. So they started in September, and that happened right around the time I was retiring. We had many staff development conferences, and I ended up as a staff developer, and we were told to teach to the test. Well, I thought that was outrageous, because if anybody can pass a test if they know how the test is scored and they know how the questions are the pivotal, words, that would indicate how you should answer that question. That's not education at all. That's not. It's passing a test.
Is that because if their students pass the test, it makes them look good as teachers? Is that primarily for that?
Well, it makes teachers look good, but it even more,
that's what I mean,
makes the administrators and it makes the superintendents look good. And on paper,
yeah,
they can say, oh, look, at my school has an 80%, reading score, or they have, a 75% math score. We're doing great. We have to improve, but we're really doing great. That's not necessarily good education. It's just not. A single test does not indicate the kind of student that you have. And every teacher knows that there are kids who struggle with a variety of subjects. Well, your job as a teacher is to help that student learn how to overcome the anxiety over math, for example. There are some students that are very anxious about math. But you can teach a child how to overcome that. But you have to be able to have the flexibility to go off script, and you have to be able to have the flexibility to find another method that will work with that child. And so if you are a teacher who loves kids, you find that method. But it becomes very difficult, and it has become increasingly difficult in the last 20 years since I retired, for teachers to do that. Now, brand new teachers are afraid of going off script because they are being investigated by their supervisors, many of whom have had minimal classroom experience. And that's a real, real serious issue. Any administrator who becomes a boss should have no less than at least 5 to 10 years of teaching experience in a classroom, because that prepares them for the variety of issues that classroom management, dictates, and different kinds of students and having different kinds of teaching techniques. If you don't have that as a background and you haven't been part of being in front of 30 kids in New York City, it's 30 kids, 28, 30 kids, how do you tell somebody how to do that job? You can't. Now, you can read a book and say, well, this is what it says in the book, but that does not mean that you are, telling the new teacher the right thing. So new teachers are very vulnerable, and they are now very afraid of going off script. A veteran teacher is much more, resilient. I'm going to use the word resilient, and they will find a way to get the child to succeed because that's their aim. And the bottom line is, no matter how you begin your September, in June, you are required to make sure that every student has mastered a certain level of every single subject. How you get there is not terribly important, but it has become imperative in most schools that you do it exactly the way somebody else has prescribed you to do it, which makes it very difficult. Makes it very difficult. And I'm sure that there are many teachers who start out and they're very excited and, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And after a few years, they say, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this because it's not fulfilling the needs of my kids, my students. That's where the parents come in. The parents are very important in this equation. So
is that because, you know, the following the letter and the rules of it, has the teachers union been the cause of that, do you think, or why? Why are teachers today being forced to follow a script? Where did that begin?
Well, I think it's, first of all, I think that it's much simpler to have a rule of thumb that this is how you're going to teach and this is when you're going to teach it. It makes it simpler for administrators to check up, okay? And I think the unions have, you know, they're not usually or have not been, except recently, been on the same page with the administrator. They usually are on the opposite side. But again, it is more feasible, I guess, simpler for everybody to do the same thing at the same time. That's not good education. It's just not good education. You have to be flexible enough to know a student who is a visual learner or a kinesthetic learner or an auditory learner and you know, hone in to the way they learn and help them to learn the subject that you are required, you know, to teach them by the end of June. Now, if you don't get to, you know, a certain point in September and you get to it in November, but then in December you jump up 3 months, you're still on track. Having the flexibility to do that creates really wonderful, wonderful teachers, and it creates students who really want to come to school and they really, really want to learn. You know, if you ask most little kids, you know, how they like school, they love school. Kindergarten, pre-K, first grade, oh, I love school. By the time you get to third grade or fourth grade, kids say, you know, I hate school and I don't want to, you know, that's because of the test and being taught to the test and not having the exploration abilities that they should have, And I'm very disturbed that the teachers union has opted, you know, to follow a prescription that is not only not accurate, but it is harmful to students. And I think it's harmful, you know, to teachers as well. I know some teachers who have opted in New York City not to take the vaccine. They're out of a job. These were very, very good teachers. They're out of a job. Now, there's something wrong with that. They're willing to take the weekly test. They're willing to do all the other things, but because they're not vaccinated, they're out of a job. There's something wrong with that. They
Let me ask you a question about students in schools these days. You know, I mean, when we were younger and went to school, we had great, you know, we had great respect for our teachers. We didn't sit and talk back to our teachers, you know, stuff like that. But I gather, you know, especially in a city like New York, it's tough to handle a classroom full of kids where they're talking back at the teachers and, you know, cursing at their teachers. And that goes on a lot. Am I right?
Yes, it does.
I know I'm right.
Yes, it does. And you know, when you were a teacher, I used to say to my kids, I have all the aces. You have no aces. So I'm the person in charge. If I ask you to do something, it's because I know that you have to do this in order to get to the next step. So you might not like what I have to say, but you have to follow what I have to say because my vision for you is to be successful. And So the kids, you know, would not really understand, you know, until much further down the road, you know. But I didn't have a lot of management problems. I wasn't the student's friend in the classroom. Now, I have many former students who I am friends with, who still are in touch with me after, you know, 40 years. You know, they're married, they have kids, and, you know, and we're still in touch with each other because in some way I must have touched their heart. And they knew that I really loved them and I would support them. That is very, very important, I think, you know. I think we're missing the boat. I think we should be more flexible in our approach to what is being taught, because what is being taught is a curriculum that is set up and it's for the most part, it's pretty good. Unfortunately, in any kind of decision-making, teachers are never included. You never have a committee where teachers who are in the classroom, not out of the classroom, but in the classroom, are included in any kind of meaningful discussions. And the same is true with parents. Now, parents don't necessarily have the educational expertise, but they're their children's primary educators. So they will know things that a teacher does not know, an administrator does not know, a district superintendent does not know, a school, you know, board does not know. And you know, on that note, parents who have school districts where they elect the school board members should know what those members stand for prior to election. It shouldn't be a, you know, I like this person or, you know, this is a good person. What are their aims? What are their, you know, credentials? How are they going to improve my child's education? They should investigate that, and it should be a serious discussion prior to them voting, because these people make decisions that affect everybody. And sometimes, you know, as you have seen in the news, they don't feel that teachers and parents should be involved in anything, that they are supreme. Well, they're not. They're not on the front line. They're not on the front line. And until you're on the front line, you don't know what's happening.
You know, it's interesting. You said earlier on when you started teaching and you thought the public schools gave the best education. Today, if you were starting today, would you say the same thing or would you consider going to teach in a private school?
Well, I'll say this. I would do, you know, investigation. There are some schools in New York City that are just top-notch schools, and it has nothing to do with neighborhoods. It has to do with the climate of the school. It has to do with the administration, including teachers, you have a like a community in these schools that do so very, very well. Those schools are top-notch. And on the other hand, there are other schools that are not top-notch. So if I were to investigate and I was able to get a job in one of these top-notch schools, that's where I would go. That's where I would apply. And if not, I would consider the private sector. I would consider. But I really believe, you know, that the public school is essential in our society. I don't think it should be, you know, I am certainly in favor of parents being able to make a decision if they feel their child is not being serviced in a public school setting. They should have the right to look elsewhere. They should be able to have those funds which are allocated by the federal government be passed down. I certainly think that that's a viable and, to be frank, very sensible solution to a problem. But I don't think that they should do this as a whim. It should be with investigation. It should be with, you know, with some studying and analysis. And, you know, I think that in order to make a good decision, you have to have some knowledge.
No question.
If you're making a decision just because your neighbor is doing it, that's not the right reason, because it may not be the right reason for your child.
Well, these are all such great points. It's interesting hearing you comment. I want to talk to you about your scholarship fund, but let me mention one other thing. Let me just ask you, what is the basic benefit of the teachers' union right now, other than them making sure that the teachers get a decent salary or the amount of money that they're after? How would you answer that?
That's a very hard decision to make. I think the teachers' union have failed miserably in doing removal of teachers that are unfit. They should have done this years and years ago. Tenure is important, but it is not the end-all and be-all. And there are some people who are teaching who should not be teaching. And instead of the union doing a self-examination and saying, gee, you know, you should not be in this business. This is not the right profession for you, as sad as that may be. They support these people and these individuals, and I've worked with a number of them who are now getting pensions, and they have done tremendous damage to kids. But the teachers' union should have been on the forefront. And unfortunately, once you are tenured in New York City anyway, now I know in other districts they don't have this, but once you are tenured, it is almost impossible to get rid of a teacher.
Fired.
And
yeah.
That should be removed. That should not be a continued, you know, aim of the teachers' union. They should be more interested in having quality educators in their school system. So I think that they have done a great disservice to the general population, and I am very opposed to them automatically only supporting the Democratic Party. And when you become a teacher, you go on to, you join a thing called COPE, and it is a political, you know, and you're able to opt out of it, but you automatically get enrolled. And, when you opt out, which I did many, many, many years ago, because I disagreed with the fact that, like all teachers are good, well, all politicians are not good, and all politicians are not pro-education, and there are many other, independents and Republicans that are very pro-education, and they see the right things, and the union almost never, never, never supports anybody who's not a Democrat. That's a mistake.
Maureen?
So I'm not,
I don't want to interrupt you on that. That's a great subject, but I want to get to, we're almost out of time. I want to point out, you founded an educational scholarship fund in the name of your son, Christopher Santora. You have a website, Christopher Santora Educational Scholarship Fund.com. You provide scholarships for children. Tell me briefly about that. We only have about a minute and a half left. How are you doing with that this year?
Well, we've downsized tremendously. We've given about $750,000 over the 20 years that I've been doing this, and it was to allow children who wrote an essay on any it's a specific topic to get a scholarship. It's a $2,000 a year for 4-year scholarship, so it's $8,000. We have judges, and they judge, and it's the essay that makes, the winner. So you don't have to be a top student to win. You have to be a good writer, and you have to be passionate about what you write. And we're, last year we gave 3 scholarships because I'm getting older, and it was beginning to take over my life. So I had to kind of downsize. But we're still involved, and we're still, involved in this. I'm doing my best. That's correct. For as long as I can,
Maureen,
do it.
You're a terrific lady. I wish we had more time. Again, that's the Christopher Santora Educational Scholarship Fund.com. Maureen, you've done so much for so many. It's such a real tribute to you and your background and what you've done for these so many kids. It's great to talk to you again. I love hearing your thoughts and your points of view. You're an educator, and you know really what it's all about. You've spent most of your life in the classroom teaching kids. Thank you so much for helping us and for talking to us today. Okay? It's been great having you
Thank
as a guest.
Thank you, Doug. Thank
you,
you
are
so
very,
much,
very well.
Doug. Have a wonderful,
Maureen
wonderful
Santora
day.
In Long Island City, New York. Bye.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.